Heading to CBC? Make sure to stop by booth 1989 to chat with the Brewbound team, check out our live podcast recordings, and find out about Brewbound's upcoming events. Have news to submit ahead of the show? Head to brewbound.com/submitnews to let us know about your latest updates.
Welcome to the Brewbound Podcast. I'm Justin Kendall, and I am joined in the Brewbound Podcast studio by the Duke of the Dad Joke, BevNet Editor-in-Chief Jeff Kleinman. Jeff, a pleasure to have you.
Pleasure to be here, Justin. I will, take that as a kind word from someone who, even though he has no children, is still capable of pulling out a dad joke or two.
A dad dog joke, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You are a dog dad.
I am a dog dad.
Woof.
And we're actually going to talk about news.
It's amazing. It's the first time in 6 weeks that something newsy has made it onto this show. But it's big, man. I mean, we've been watching CBA for years. I've been drinking its component parts since I was in college, which, you know, is
Red Hook Widmer or
Red Hook and Widmer.
You both? Know?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually one of my early newspapering jobs, it was up in New Hampshire where the Bud Brewery became the Red Hook Brewery, I believe.
Mm. I think you're right.
Yeah, man. I got a memory like a steel trap. That's what dads have. We remember everything and we know the right time to bring it up.
This is the perfect time.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're pulling down the Red Hook flags there, though, and putting the Bud flags back up in the great state of New Hampshire.
They very well could be if this deal goes through. That's right. CBA and AB finally made it official. AB is going to acquire CBA for $16.50 a share.
Yeah, my favorite part of this is that when the deal didn't go down a few months ago,
August 23rd was the deadline day.
Yeah, that was the last day you actually worked. When that deal didn't go down, Bud had to pay CBA $20 million. And there were almost exactly 20 million shares of CBA stock outstanding. So you get $1 a share as the penalty.
That stock took a major, major hit after the deal didn't go down. I think it was trading at $7.33 right up until earlier last week when AB and CBA made it official. Stock shot up, rising like the Phoenix to around a little more than $16.
To quote Artie from Gary Shandling's old show, I haven't seen anything shoot up that fast since I shared a limo with Ginger Baker in 68.
Does that count as a dad joke?
That's the great Rip Torn.
Oh, man.
We lost him this year.
And so. Rip Taylor? Was Rip
Taylor?
Yeah,
Rip Taylor. Just we've been torn from our rips this year.
We've been ripped apart. See, that is a dad joke.
I think we're going to put it out to the studio audience since this is the final Brewbound podcast of the season. We're going to isolate that. Is having two rips torn from us or being ripped apart more of a dad joke? We're waiting for your calls.
Yes, and we'll be sitting right by the phone waiting.
Yep.
I mean, the big question coming out of this for me is what happens once the deal finally gets completed in 2020, once it gets through regulatory approval, if it gets through regulatory approval, what happens to the brands not named Kona?
Yeah, no, it's interesting, too, because that brand itself really sort of smacks of Corona. Whereas the rest of the CBA portfolio is closer to that craft profile,
mm-hmm.
So Will those brands have value, or is Bud just thinking, well, here we've got another sort of national lifestyle type brand that we can roll out?
Do they divest? Can they divest? I'm curious what happens to Red Hook, what happens to Widmer Brothers, what happens to any of the other brands in the portfolio. I can see some interest maybe from AB in having Wynwood in Miami.
Yep.
They can build on La Rubia, their blonde ale. I could see some interest in having a brewery like Cisco Brewers in the Northeast.
Yep.
And then the question becomes, what about an Appalachian Mountain Brewery? What happens to Omission? What happens to Square Mile Cider? What happens to the pH experiment?
Yeah. Do people still feel up in Portland that sort of kinship with Widmer that they did 20, 25 years ago?
I think that the sales numbers would say that they may not. And they did close the Widmer Brothers tap room.
Yeah. But who goes to tap rooms anyway?
Yeah, there's nothing going on in tap rooms
no,
anymore.
It's true.
Make no mistake about this, though. This is a huge win for Andy Thomas, the CEO of Craft Brew Alliance. He has worked very hard on rationalizing their footprint, putting them in a position to be acquired by AB. At the same time, he's done everything possible to prepare for the event that they did not get the qualifying offer.
Yeah. I mean, it's like he's got to sleep on both sides of his pillow, you know, trying to figure this out at night. And it's really, if nothing else, masterful business leadership to play both ends against the middle and get the deal done. And I'm sure Bud is thinking, well, you know what? I have no idea what's going on in the minds at ABI.
It's Kona.
Yeah. I know is better minds than mine have spent a lot of time thinking through this problem, and hopefully it's a satisfactory end for both of them.
I want to see what AB can do with the Kona brand and how they can take a brand that has been 500,000 barrels, and if they can accelerate it even higher. You drew the correlation to Corona.
Yep.
Are we going to see Kona ads, you know, all over the TV? You know, are we going to see, is there an opportunity to see a Kona Super Bowl ad someday?
Will we see Kona Seltzer? Is that in the offing?
That is actually in the offing.
I'm a prognosticator galore.
Yeah, I mentioned Andy during the call with investors and analysts, because this was their third quarter call as well. He mentioned that the $16.50 per share that they got represented better than 30 times EBITDA multiple. So that placed this transaction in the very top tier of craft transactions from the EBITDA multiple perspective, Andy said.
Well, that is very impressive. I have no EBITDA, but the one thing I will say is that Brew is my second favorite stock ticker symbol behind weed.
This is a good point. This is what makes me super sad about this deal.
The disappearance of it. Although Bud,
the retiring of Brew.
You know, although Bud sort of fits right in the middle.
Yeah.
Between Brew and weed. So despite the loss of Brew as such a great ticker, we're always going to have Kona. And that's no lie.
A wonderful transition.
Thank
because
you.
This week's featured interview is No Lie Brewhouse founder John Bryant. There are few people in this industry who are as passionate about balance sheets and P&Ls as Bryant. He's candid about the struggles of his small brewery and the realities that come with self-reflection. So let's go to our interview with John Bryant. This is Justin Kindle with Brewbound, and I'm joined today in the Brewbound podcast studio by John Bryant, the co-founder and owner of No Lie Brewhouse in Spokane, Washington. For our listeners who may not know No Lie, since there are 7,500 breweries and counting now, give us a little of the backstory on No Lie and yourself.
No Lie Brewhouse is kind of an accumulation of being in the industry for 30 plus years and having worked, you know, at Rainier Brewery, Henry Weinhard's at G. Heilman, and then Deschutes Brewery, Odell Brewing, and Oscar Blues in a number of roles in different departments and areas of leadership, and came to a point in about 2011, 2012, where a good friend of mine who was a huge mentor, Jack Joyce, back in the day from Rogue Ales, just said, hey, you need to go do something and do something special and get that creativity really going. And we basically moved back home to the Northwest in Spokane, Washington. And there was a brewery, two prior breweries in the same site. One was the Bayou Brewing Company that had gone out of business, and then one was the Northern Lights Brewing Company. And we basically hyphenated the Northern Lights to NOLI, kind of honoring the brewing history in this one site. And off we went with NOLI Brew House, which was really pivoted and created in kind of the spirit of community and trying to do something really special in that region that could get a craft beer culture really going. But more importantly, learning from a lot of mentors across the country over, say, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And so NOLI is kind of an expression of a lot of those experiences. But it does put pressure on you a little bit to go, you know, we got to succeed then. Then we've got to do better at making better beer, more innovation, better R&D to serve that customer. And I think, as you know, community is part of our ethos. I think referred to as servant leadership is a big part of what we do too. And that is really learning to serve, listen, and learn makes you a hell of a lot better. And when we're younger in this business, frankly, a lot of us are tone deaf to a lot of that. Yeah. We have where we want to go as a bunch of alpha females and males, and we're heading that way. And I think as you grind in this business and it kind of rounds out your edges a little bit, you really reflect and go, wow, I'm pretty blessed to be in this industry. But what about the future? How awesome is it? There's so much market chaos right now that if you can just sort it out a bit, you can be really, really successful and do a great job in your community and serve the people that you work with.
I'm not sure that there's anyone in this business who talks as passionately about balance sheets as you do. We had you at Brew Talks in Denver a couple of years back, and I remember you beating the drum of the balance sheet and taking care of that. And a couple of years ago, you know, it probably wasn't as critical, but it was on the horizon, and now we're seeing that shift.
Jack Joyce was brilliant, and Win Odell is really great at financials. There's a lot of people, I mean, that are great at the financials, but what I was really taught was every line item on a P&L or a balance sheet is a picture, and that picture kind of comes to life. It's almost like a movie. It's like a movie, and what you want to do is have every line item work together in sync, and if one line item is out of sync, you got to figure out why, because you're spending money and time. Sometimes it's money, it's your energy. And go back through that thing every month and you look at it, you critique it and go, how does this best serve our people? How does it best serve our beer? And then how does it best serve our community? And if your P&L and your balance sheet are working in tandem to accomplish those things, you can do some pretty magical stuff. Mm-hmm. We're very fortunate to be debt-free. That's one thing. I'll go back to when Odell, when we were at Odell Brewing, was get that debt off the balance sheet so you can make balanced, methodical, kind decisions. When you have a lot of debt like we did in the early days, you're just trying to make payroll. Mm-hmm. And there was a day, I remember it was year one of NOLI, and our bookkeeper came to me and goes, we got a problem. I'm like, well, what's the problem? And that's back, and I know a lot of people can probably relate to this. You have more stacks of invoices than you have money in the bank. And I said, wouldn't it be great one day to spend so much less time moving around what we pay to try to stay current and spend that time being productive? Well, at this point, we have $2,000 in the bank. We're $65,000 way past current, and payroll's in 3 days. What do you want to do?
What did you do?
Well, that's when you walk the floor, drink coffee, and you try to find money that you can borrow and pay back to buy yourself time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the early days was just trying to find ways to keep our head above water. And that's that really sick pain in your stomach that just is like, it just burns. I think that's where the passion really came through, because there's a lot of times we could have just given up, walked away. Obviously, it would have been very painful with a lot of debts and a lot of obligations you have to fulfill. Or you grind and you try to figure it out. I think that goes to being a tradeswoman. Is in a trade, it doesn't always go your way. And you do have to innovate. And I think right now, given you know the three-tier system, which we hold, there's love because it gets our beer to market, is how to take that passion, that discipline, that grind, and move it to a relationship with your distributor. Mm-hmm. As there's now roughly 8,000 breweries in America, and distributor consolidation has probably the fewest number of breweries in America, probably, you know, so you're working against each other where a lot of brands, a lot fewer avenues to market. What sets you apart in that distributor? And I hope the relationship that Noli Brewhouse has with the distributors, they know we grind, they know we study the data. You know, we purchase data that we can afford. You know, we do analysis on, you know, revenue per barrel and look at the value of square foot real estate on a grocery store. Is it in the best interest of rate or sale for the retailer and the distributor to carry your products? So you're looking out for their best interests.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that care and that depth will put you into conflict. But what you hope is that you're respected because you care so much, not only about the love of your trade, the love of your people, but the love of the industry and their business, their ears prop up just a little bit more and go, we may not always be in agreement, but I know you got my back. And I think that's really important for brewers to know as you're working with distributors, there's going to be friction. You have to get their back. And it doesn't mean you're all going to get along. I mean, there can be contentious discussions, but there's never like a hate, if that makes any sense. It means we are grinding each other to fortify, to get better, to be better.
So that builds stronger relationships, I imagine, or at least it can, and if you do it right.
Absolutely, and it takes time. I mean, you have to test it out. And that's where the distributor needs to trust in your company that you're investing wisely. So we get to say, hey, we have zero debt. Well, you hope that conveys to your business partners is you can think. You can be methodical. You can invest.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always good to have no debt. I mean, that means you're not investing necessarily beyond cash flow. So then you go, okay, if I'm going to go borrow money right now, where are we going to borrow to go invest to create a fruitful relationship that's going to bring back dividends for you, the distributor, right? Because they're looking at turns. They're looking at cash flow too, and they want to see something that's growing. What you want them to trust in you is that you're doing the right things for 3 years from now.
I imagine it was a struggle to get to sort of the point that you are with your wholesalers. So when you've got those relationships that can be contentious, what do you say to a brewer in that position to sort of work out that relationship?
Yeah. I think the first thing is be good to your word. And your word may not be in agreement with that person, but if they know that you're good to your word, that's a starting point of a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're asked a question and you can give a response and it's an honest response and a truthful response, and maybe it's hurtful because it's not what they want, at least they know who you are. I think that's really important to have somebody understand who you are as a business person, but also as a brewer. To work through that, there's compromise. And sometimes in that negotiation, it takes time to get to the place to understand what the other side, meaning the distributor or the retail, really wants. And I'll give you an example of the Safeway Albertsons corporate buyer who basically writes every grocery store set in the Pacific Northwest. You know, they do these resets twice a year. And if you miss that reset time for your package, it just doesn't go in and you can't reach the customer. And about 3 years ago, some of our products that we'd seen doing really well in like IRI and AC Nielsen scan totally missed getting in. And I just couldn't get a meeting with the individual. So I picked up the phone because they're really busy. And he basically let me know that, hey, man, keep growing. You're out of your league right now, so to speak, and you're not getting in. And by the way, you're going to lose some of this stuff too. Okay? So if it's challenging authority, but I came with information, but my message wasn't received well, and probably how I delivered the message, which is a lot of it wasn't received well. About 4 months later, having a lot of products not in that store, and it really hurt our business. You really find who you are. Like, you can quit, give up, you can call people names, or you can find a way to meet face to face. And through a good buddy of mine who was at Deschutes Brewery, got me a meeting. And we sat down, ate a sandwich in his office with the door closed, figured out how much stuff we had in common, allowed me to present data that really said, hey, this could be really great for your customer base. But in return, what do I have to do to be accountable back to you to earn our way in? And then that person's, to their credit, they showed me the flip side of the data that said, you weren't ready to be in here. You know mm-hmm. what? He was right. What I did in that time is we did as a company for the next 6 months was earn our way back. And so what we did is we built the business around maybe where some of those stores were that we weren't able to get in. And then they started seeing the scan data come up around them.
Mm-hmm.
Then we earned our way in. So aspirationally, we were ready to be there, right?
Yeah.
Business-wise for this person, we weren't. And that's hard for a young brewer.
And if you would have got in, it probably would have damaged that relationship and you probably couldn't have built it on the back end.
You nailed it. If we would have got in early and the sales and the name of Noli Brewhouse was the notoriety of Big Juicy IPA or Born and Raised IPA were not strong enough in Seattle, Olympia, Bellingham, those markets at that time, and we get thrown out in the next reset, forever damaged the company.
Mm-hmm.
So in a lot of ways, you could say what he basically made us do was earn it, be ready for it. And in that 6 month period, we went out and really worked the streets hard with our distributor to earn that right in the peripheral stores of competitors to show, hey, it's time.
Malt Europe Malting Company is North American proud with premium grains from field to flavor. Our selections include base, specialty, and distillers malt varieties. Stop by our booth, 2143, at the Craft Brewers Conference in Vegas. Does your brewing software suck? We've heard it from thousands of brewers. Connect with Ollie today, and we'll buy out your current contract and hook you up with brewing software that doesn't suck. Visit booth 1685 at CBC or hit getollie.com/pod.
One of the things you mentioned here was this chaotic moment that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like no one throughout the entire value chain was structured for what we're seeing today or what we're about to experience as the numbers of breweries keep going up, the number of wholesalers keep going down due to consolidation. And there are thousands of SKUs out there. Consumer is not monogamous. They do know what they want, and they want variety. So I guess when you look at that situation, how do you cut through that noise and emerge a winner? And not just for No Lie, but what advice would you give other brewers in that position?
It's, you know, old school, new school. So when I got in the business in the late 80s and I was worked for Rainier and Henry's, we managed distributors. We were trained to manage distributors. That's what you were trained to do. You weren't necessarily trained to work in the trade to go call in all the accounts. You were trained to manage these deep sales teams at a number of distributors. And the distributors are competing against each other because there might be 7, 8 different distributors in Seattle, Washington, where today there's primarily 2 or 3. Today, new school, I think if you want to be really relevant to sales team, and it includes myself, and I think Jim Cook has been on the forefront leadership of this. A guy in his prime, which he's still in his prime, traveled a lot to every place he sold beer. And he didn't just do a sales meeting in the distributorship. He got in a car and did a ride with. I mean, how awesome is that to have Jim Cook in your car if you pick a state you're in and he shows up in New Mexico and you get him for a half day? And he's calling on accounts. He's learning from you. You're learning from him.
You're going to sell some beer.
You're going to sell some beer. That's new school. Is that if you're a representative of a brewery or even on staff of a brewery, you have to be present with your customer to learn. And you're not just selling. I mean, you're listening, you're hearing, you got to figure out what you offer. And that is completely different than 30 years ago. So if you want to cut through the clutter, employ people, train people culturally that want, this is the key thing, that enjoy being in grocery stores, that enjoy being in pubs. You have to enjoy that. Otherwise, it's a grueling grind that'll wear you down. And the only way you get there is by being passionate and learning to love what you do. Once you do that, going into an Albertsons isn't like, oh my God, here goes another Albertsons with the same music, right, that you listen to on the repeat. It's like, holy crap, there's Steve, the manager, and there's Joanne, the receiving clerk. And hey, let's walk down the aisle and see what, you know, how we're laid out here, what the pricing flow is. Are our beer styles even relevant? What's the rate of sale on these brands? Should we even be here? How are we adding value to this whole group of grocery people? And I think if we all looked at ourselves and said, what is the rate of return that a distributor and a retailer, be it a pub or a grocery store, makes on our brands, our packages, you'd be a lot more accountable back.
It sounds like it's a process of constant evaluation.
Yes.
And being honest with yourself and taking a step back and self-assessing to decide whether you are making the correct decision or if you're too aspirational, maybe.
Yeah. And we get caught on both sides of it. Is there a reason why you exist? I mean, and that's, it's really humble to look in the mirror and go, No Lie Brewhouse. Are we at the top of our game? Have we peaked? And we, you know, we went from 0 barrels to roughly 17,000 barrels in 7 or 8 years. We have developing community relationships that are always kind of connecting. Is that our place? Does it make sense to expand and grow larger? And I think if every brewer really did that, why are you getting larger? So much of the ego gets in the way of size. We measure in barrels. The BA does a report. How many barrels? People immediately feel pressured. You know, I got to get my barrels up or I'm dying kind of thing. And that's not what it's about.
You want to get your dollars up.
You want to get your dollars up. You want to get your financial strong. You want to grow a great culture of people that understand what it takes to make payroll.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of culture that we've tried to do, you know, a decent job of is this is what it takes to operate this entity today. But in this chaos, there's so much room out there. We could grow this business and we could all do a hell of a lot better.
So when you look at No Lie, are you firing on all cylinders, or where do you see the opportunities to improve?
There's always a place to improve. We are firing on a lot of cylinders. I think you can always add a cylinder. You know, I think what we're doing is being a better job of being open-minded and understanding ultimately who do we serve, and that's the customer. Ultimately, you look at a lot of the sales data, brewers, AC Nielsen, IRI, and you're quickly finding that the craft beer industry is single-digit growth. But where's all that volume? There's just as many young adults in the world, right? Or at least in the USA. White Claw, Truly, cider, kombucha. I mean, it's an alcohol beverage craft brewer.
Mm-hmm.
And we put a lot of time and energy in creating our Day Fade hard seltzer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a heck of a project that actually, I think, made us better tradespeople, better brewers. Because it is really very difficult to make a hard seltzer well.
That seems like a very scary place to play when you have two players, maybe three, two for sure in White Claw and Truly, who are dominating the whole segment. And then you've got AV with Bon and Viv, and you've got any number of others. You've got all the craft with Oscar Blues taking theirs national. So when you make a decision to go in a space like that, how is it that you feel like you can sort of set your, again, cut through the noise?
Mm-hmm. Competing. And I think a lot of us, let's say alpha female, alpha males, you know, we're in the beverage industry. We love it. We love being around the customer, and you get this competitive energy, be it a sports team or if you're a musician or whatever you love to compete in. To be able to take on to do a hard seltzer and do it well is scary because it's different. But when you've practiced and grinded and grinded and you know, you look in the mirror and you're trying to figure out why you exist, you quickly figure out you exist to serve the customer. And where's the customer moving to? Doesn't mean we still can't be great craft brewers and we're still continuing to innovate with new brands every month in the beer set. But that competitive flair, that competitive discipline is part of our culture. And so it is scary to jump into it, but then you look for resources to help you do it well. Okay, fine, we're not set up to do it all by ourselves, but I bet you we could tap into a few mentors. I bet you we could tap in with enough research, people who have done there and been there and done it well, and do it on our own regional basis. So it's Truly and White Claw are commanding, obviously, nationally in that set. There is a place for a No Lie Day Fade hard seltzer in the Pacific Northwest as a worthy contender. So our job is to, as it is daunting to go up against, you could say, Hot Valley owned by Miller Coors, mm-hmm. or a Legion and Tin Barrel owned by Budweiser. It's daunting every day to go out and sell beer against them, because we're completely under-resourced to do that. So we got to make better beer, we have to have better relevant branding, and we need to have people that are on the street just apply that same competitive set to hard seltzer, and you get through it.
Yeah. And does that lead to other alcoholic beverage diversity?
Absolutely. I think, you know, and Boston Beer has been brilliant about it, obviously. You know, we're looking at ourselves as we're a craft brewer of alcoholic beverages right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean it has to be alcohol beverages either, but there's a lot of variety out there for the 21 to 35 adult people who enjoy it. And we find that by putting a cider on tap in our pub. And it was a nice alternative. I mean, what's to say that No Lie couldn't have a cidery? Not saying we're going to, but your mind has to open up to those avenues because our drinker has changed. And with 8,000 brewers in America, and a slowing of the growth, and the national and international brewers buying what they feel to be the gems of each region, if you're an independent brewer, you really got to find your sense of place, sense of being, and why you exist, or you're going to be pushed out of the way.
Do you feel like Day Fade and some of these other hard seltzers will be around 2, 5, 10 years from now?
I think in some form. I think that's so early that people are experiencing or experimenting with sweetness levels, caloric levels, number of carbs. So yes, it's just a matter of, it may not be a hard seltzer. It might be alcohol in a different type of beverage. But as this generation is much more, on a lot of levels, health conscious, and it's not just calories, it might be carbs. It's all that stuff. They're looking for beverages that still allow them to have both.
Mm-hmm.
And a craft brewery, if you have a a big IPA and you have two of them, that's a different experience than just saying have two hard seltzers.
Is it hard to get a staff who've trained in, you know, classical brewing to jump into these other areas?
That's a great question, because a lot of us come into beer because we love beer. We're tradespeople. Then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, is that selling out? To all of a sudden we're just changing to meet a customer. And you sit down and go, okay, why we operate is to serve the community. It is to be financially profitable so we can invest. And it's to create a culture. And if doing day fade hard seltzer, if we can do it really, really well, allows us to reach the community, can create financial revenue to serve our own people, and then also invest back into the brewery, that's a win-win. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we can use the day fade hard seltzer to be financially successful, to then use that revenue to invest back into beer equipment, brewery, people, then all people buy into the larger part is that we're a craft brewer.
I want to talk a little bit about what being financially stable and sound sort of opens up for a brewery like yours, because you've made some investments, I understand, outside of what you already own. And I'd like to hear more about having that stable, secure balance sheet and growing from there.
Yeah. Having balance and, you know, for the first 4 or 5 years, just trying to make payroll, it doesn't really allow you the vision to look broader because you're just trying to make it to tomorrow sometimes. But as we worked our way into that stronger position, as we consolidated back in, fresher beer, more innovation, more R&D, and the brewery really started to click, and we were able to kind of pay down debts and get to a strong position, because it didn't happen overnight, we were disciplined in the financials of really having to look all the time on how to do it better. And when you start really looking at things that tightly versus just starting with $5 million, it creates a discipline in you to say, okay, if this is how we're going to spend our life, if this is our journey, let's try to have some fun with it while we compete. Well, it put us in a position where the next largest brewery in our region or area wanted to get out, and it just wasn't going well. And literally over a couple of meetings, a couple of cups of coffee, a couple of pints on a napkin, we penciled out the ability to purchase a 30-barrel brew house and facility to be able to expand Noli, but also then to be able to do our hard seltzer at that separate location.
Ah.
And because of that, having that ability, it was timing. That opportunity was there. We handled both parties, handled it with a lot of respect. And it then allowed our people to see our team that, hey, we are investing. We are looking broader. This will allow us to make beer at home with the tenants of our other brewery. And but it'll also allow us now to do more R&D and look at different categories of adult alcoholic beverages.
How long ago was that deal?
Just under a year ago, like last August.
Okay.
So it's pretty recent. We spent, you know, the better part of the last year doing upgrades and changes and making it really a great brewery that makes amazing beer.
Taproom component too?
We could. At this point, we don't. It's strictly a production facility.
Okay.
And down the road, we could.
I guess what's the vision there? How big do you want to see Noli get? Because I imagine each level has its own comfort and discomfort. So what balance are you trying to strike there?
And I know a lot of people, if they listen to this and they're smaller brewers, it has to be something that drives you when you're out of money. Mm-hmm. There has to be something that drives you when your relationships are drying up. There has to be something that drives you, or you just sacrifice. And I think for us, and it's this deep place that gets me motivated at 2 a.m. to get up, drink coffee and think, is community. If we can serve Spokane, Seattle, Olympia, and all the markets we sell beer in a different, unique way, and the way we always go look for maybe those who are underserved, we look for groups on the fringes. We look to embrace groups that maybe aren't as attractive or fashionable as a charity. And then we try to get involved. And then when you get involved and you hear real life human stories from people, it's not just humbling, it's like real. Mm-hmm. And it makes you work harder and it insists that you work smarter. And having that, knowing that you have the luxury of opportunity that maybe we've made it to a certain level now. Okay, now what the hell do we want to do with that? And I'll give you a really cool opportunity that came our way because of some success by the community was Hoopfest, which is the largest 3-on-3 basketball tournament in the world. It's 250,000 people in Spokane for 2.5 days. And there's a charity component called Ignite Youth Basketball. And they reach out to part of our region that's underserved. You have a lot of single homes, a lot of kids living in cars. I mean, it's really a tough situation. A lot of cities have. This program gets money in to giving them a place in the evening to go to for mentoring, go play basketball, get off the street, have a safe place. Mm-hmm. Through HoopFest, seeing how NOLI was aligned in the community, we had common values and that we truly were going the same direction, we kind of reached out to each other at the same time and said, we need to form some type of partnership. Because it's not necessarily about HoopFest and it's not about NOLI, it's about the community. And so we started it this year in Spokane and we hope to take that over to Seattle next year. Now all of a sudden, NOLI has purpose. Mm-hmm. If we can make great beer that resonates with people and they just love drinking it, and the byproduct of that is some type of financial wealth that we can parlay asset reallocation into something, now it makes a lot of sense. It goes back to like Guinness and Dublin and those breweries of a couple hundred years ago. You exist to serve. And I think in the humbling place at 3 a.m., when you're out of money and your stomach hurts and you're walking the floor, you don't know where to go, nothing's current, you have to figure out your purpose and your meaning. And I think for NOLI is that we do have really high expectations of people that work around us. There's no doubt about that. We try to get them, you had a great question earlier, how do you get that culture to evolve? I think for us, it's to wrap our hands and to embrace the community at a level that serves on the fringes. It's different. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of painful at times to, my wife, Cindy's a CASA and a child advocate appointed by the courts to work with kids that have a really tough go at life. And those stories you hear are so painful and truly make you want to cry, right? But they also motivate you because you have the ability through some success you can create to help create change.
So you guys are really working to reach out to underserved communities.
Yes.
You're working, I guess the question gets to, the work that the Brewers Association has put forth with Dr. J as the diversity and inclusion director. And a lot of times the question becomes, how do I get involved? And it's not as simple as just jumping in. It's about meeting those communities where they are. And it sounds like NOLI is doing that.
For every brewer who may listen to this, you have a platform to change your community. As you create a culture of beer that weaves with food and music, it's just not lip service. You have the ability to impact your community. And it could be on a whole number of levels, but the first way to do it is just by your energy and your time to get involved. A lot of things like, we're running a program this month with the Human Rights Commission and Odyssey Youth Movement in the Northwest. And it's not so much about the check that we're going to write at the end of the month, because in the big picture, it's not very much. What the big part of it is through our social media and through the messaging, is to get that out and to reach people. Mm-hmm. That's way more valuable than the money. And what it says is kind of leadership by example. It's putting yourself out there. And then more importantly, you're learning from what you engage in that then this makes you stronger. And to me, that's incredibly motivating.
So how have you seen that sort of turn back to the brewery?
I think, Casey's here. I think you start to see these groups come into NOLI Pub and they feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. It's a communal place. It's a place to celebrate. It's a place where we shouldn't have to say everybody's welcome, but of course everybody's welcome. Mm-hmm. So we go out of our way to go, this is a place for our community and our communities to celebrate. And what we're starting to find is a really significant number of tourists and visitors from around the Pacific Northwest, but I was sitting at the bar the other day, the guy from New York City, and he was in town for some type of business trip and he had heard of NOLI and he wanted to see it. And I'm like, wow, that is pretty cool. So a lot of what we're doing in Spokane is trying to emphasize the best of Spokane to serve the underside of maybe the fringes of Spokane. And through the brewery, just a little bit, if we can just be a little bit of a support, make a stronger community. And then that gets you up in the morning with adrenaline. That creates passion. That has you, as you have these, back to the three-tier industry. When you have an issue with a Safeway or Albertsons buy, you're not going to quit and you're not going to give up. And once they know you, you know why. They understand why you won't quit and give up. Mm-hmm. They understand that. Like, the intention is right. The endeavor is great. Give us a chance. And with our distributor, I'm going to tell you, I have some very difficult conversations with distributors, and they do back with me. And they're not always really comfortable. But I got to think everybody who we interface with knows we're passionate for the right reasons. We're just have enough discipline possibly to pull it off. And it's a long journey. And I think when people buy into the journey part of what makes a culture, that you're trying to do some good stuff that just makes everybody selfishly feel good, sometimes you get a hall pass. Sometimes they bend and compromise with you. Sometimes they don't.
What advice would you share to any of the up-and-coming entrepreneurs out there in this space?
Financial consultant or somebody who's an accountant you can work with to make sure that you're financially stable. If you're not financially stable, all your passion won't go anywhere. So to realize your dream, you have to be able to cash flow. Mm-hmm. That's really, really important. Because to realize your dream, you have to cash flow at some point, and you're gonna have a reserve of money like a little bit we did, where you just kept working it down, there was nothing left. At that point, it's make or break time. And you learn really quickly, you're really not out of the game till you have no cash, no credit. Once you can literally not operate, then you're out of the game. Cash is king. That's super important. Know your community. Define why you exist in that community and what you can bring in goodness to that community. And take your beer to it.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a great place to end it. So thanks for your time, John.
Thank you.
All right. That was our interview with John Bryant. Jeff, what are your takeaways from this interview?
So what I think is really interesting about this is in the beverage category and even in food, there's always this temptation to jump the second a big retailer says, hey, we need you there. And we've found a lot of entrepreneurs who say no are in the end really conscious of what they can do and are able to go further because they're more in control. And that seems to be John's message here.
Definitely is John's message here. He talked about his experience with a major grocery chain and when they thought that they were ready and they clearly weren't ready. So it's knowing when to sort of take a step back and reflect and really go over some hard truths with yourself.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to be able to have permission, not just from the retailer, but from the consumer to survive when you're in that sort of big, wide beer set or big, wide beverage set.
Well, and had they not been prepared, had there been out of stocks, had they not been able to meet the demand, they would have burned a bridge.
Exactly. And it can be really tempting to sort of satisfy one set of stakeholders, maybe your investors, really quickly by saying, hey, look, we got this revenue bump. Let's go hit the market. But sustaining same store sales year over year and growing them is what creates sort of a sustainable business. But sustaining same store sales is what creates a solid business.
You got to look beyond your own interests as well. You've got to look at the partnership and what everybody's going to get out of it too. Yeah. John talked a lot about, you know, what looking at how it's going to benefit the wholesaler and the retailer, not just themselves in the short term.
Right. So it's about earning your way into stores and knowing when you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're close to ready to wrap up this season, huh, man?
So that was season two. We are so pleased that you all joined us. Thank you for tuning in. This podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Libsyn, and SoundCloud. If you enjoyed the show, leave us a rating and a review and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. Drop us a line at podcast@brewbound.com if you'd like to be featured in season three, or if you'd just like to share your thoughts or a few dad jokes. Thank you to our audio team, our guest John Bryant, and all of our listeners out there. Catch us for season three in 2020.
And before our final cheers, make sure you come see us at Brewbound Live in just a few weeks, December 4th and 5th in Santa Monica, California.
Absolutely. I'll be there.
Cheers.
Cheers.